Studies show that players who suffer repeated head trauma are more likely to develop a serious brain disease later in life.
We have a serious public health problem of football-related brain trauma.
Concussions cost me my career and nearly took my life.
When it comes to managing the health of athletes, the world of sports is a much different one than it was even a few years ago.
Neuroscience is further accelerating how we understand sports science and how we can help athletes improve their training and their performance, their recovery and readiness, and hopefully reducing injuries and increasing career longevity over time.
Sensor technology and the resulting data are transforming sports at many levels, from how the NFL copes with the controversial issue of injuries to player preparation and team competitiveness.
We can be a little bit more refined in our methods. Instead of just a coach saying, oh, well, in this formation, I think the team's likely to run, we can assign a sort of certain percentage to that. And this player tracking data sort of opens up a whole new world in terms of what teams and coaches can do to understand their team and understand their opponents.
And the influence of tech can be seen across all manner of sports.
There's been a lot of controversy about the human umpire calling the strike zone and calling it as a human would. Major League Baseball has all of this tracking that they could build a system to call balls and strikes today.
This episode, how science and tech are augmenting athletics and how the lessons learned could benefit life beyond the playing field.
The future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
Oh. Nice, nice, well done.
Grunts and groans.
Yeah. Tells the story, right?
That's exactly right.
You know, the mobile robot that we've developed here at Dartmouth greatly impacted our practices.
Kurt Oberg assists the head football coach at Dartmouth College.
It's a robot that moves in every direction. It's 185 pounds. It's something that can be tackled by anybody and used as a blocking dummy as well. Beauty of it is it takes hits off of our own players, which is something that we're very conscious of, particularly at practice.
That's because the majority of sports-related injuries in U.S. colleges occur during practice. These four-wheeled tackle robots are called mobile virtual players. They're shaped like a punching bag and filled with high-density foam. The robots now frequent the practice fields of 15 NFL teams and dozens of high school and college football programs. It's a way to train players while minimizing the risk of giving someone a concussion. It's a rainy, chilly fall evening in New Hampshire, and I'm watching the team practice.
Since we've been driving the robot, everybody says, Kurt, there's going to probably be 22 robots on the field at some point in time with people on the side driving their players around with arms that can catch and run. But I hope that doesn't ever happen. But it's like the guys who are playing Madden, you know. Instead, they have their little controller, and they can run the football players around the field, but...
That thing moves faster than you think it would.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it runs about a 4.740. You know, once it gets to speed, it takes a little bit to get to speed. And the newer versions of it are even faster. In fact, I have to worry about spinning out when I'm driving it.
But you guys look like you're having fun with the controllers.
Yeah, you know, as an older guy, you know, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to adapt as quickly. I knew the young kids who are used to playing video games, but it didn't take me long.
All right, here we go. Is that it?
Out on the field, I get a closer look. Covered in black vinyl, the robots tower more than 6 feet off the ground and can dash across 40 yards in about 5 seconds. I, on the other hand, am much smaller, much slower, and I do not want to tackle or be tackled by one of these things.
That's it.
It's not the only way the school is using tech to try to prevent traumatic brain injuries.
You have sensors inside the players' helmets, right?
Not every player, but we do have them in a number of our players, yeah.
What do you learn from those sensors, and how do you analyze that data?
It measures the type of hits that kids are getting in their heads, whether it's hit on the side of the helmet, the top of the helmet, you know, the back of the helmet, the different areas of the helmet. So it just helps us understand the kind of impacts that the kids are getting.
Lower, get the shoulder pad on it.
If a player is hit, a 5-point sensor located in the helmet lining measures the impact. If it registers higher than an acceptable range, the sensor sends an alert to a monitor operated by a coach on the sideline. During practice, they're also measuring players' movements and effort levels with sensors that wrap around their bodies.
We can figure out how fast they're running in miles per hour. We can figure out the amount of exertion that each player has during practice, so that if we think the more they exert and the faster they run, oftentimes, you know, leads to injury, and we don't want our players getting injured during practice.
But the more you practice a play, the faster you can react when you see it again on the field. And one way to get more practice time in without risking injury at all is to relive past practices in virtual reality.
My name is Jake Allen, quarterback. I'm from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. How many, you know, really, if you think about life, like, do you ever get a chance to actually relive your mistake? And that's what you can do as Strivers. You can relive your mistake and then make sure you don't make that same mistake again.
Striver is a VR training company. Clients range from Walmart to the NFL. At Dartmouth College, 360 cameras are placed on the field during each practice, and they record everything from the player's point of view.
You have to download the practice. So basically, you're on the film, you'll hit play in VR, and it'll take you right there, take you to the play, and you put the headset on, you have a little clicker. You basically go through your plays, you go through your reads, you go through your checks, and it's all without doing anything physical. So basically, you're sitting here for hours and get the same work as you would going outside and doing it.
It gives him a chance to practice mentally while his body rests. The software can pause, repeat, or slow down key moments.
You can only run a certain amount of plays in practice, so this is just to get those extra reps that you can't get. But also, so hey, I threw a pick on this, and you're thinking, okay, why did I throw a pick? Okay, I know what I saw here, but this is what I need to do when I see this current thing. And, you know, that's why you see a lot of these high-powered offenses now in the NFL and in college, is because, you know, the devices and the preparation that's changing for everyone.
So when you talk about game strategy or player evaluation, you have way more context in determining, are you doing good things that are just not working out, or are you doing bad things and you're getting lucky? My name is Rajiv Maheswaran. I'm the CEO of Second Spectrum.
Second Spectrum is a startup that uses machine learning and computer vision to teach algorithms to see with the eyes of a coach. It's the official tracking data and analysis partner of the NBA. He says teaching a machine to understand sports is not so different than how you teach a human.
The simple example I use is whether it's a person or a machine, and you're trying to find the difference between apples and oranges, you know, you'd use things like, oh, what's the color of the thing? What's the shape of the thing? What's the size of the thing? And you use that to figure out what is an apple and what's an orange and what's neither. And what we're trying to do with Second Spectrum is, what are those things like color, shape, size for a world where a bunch of people are moving around?
An array of cameras installed in every NBA stadium records the movements of each player on the court at 25 frames per second, creating mountains of data on how the player's movement connects to their performance. Artificial intelligence analyzes this movement data and can produce stats, such as the odds an attempted three-point shot will sink the basket, in near real time.
Kyrie, for three.
This allows for a better understanding of how difficult any given play is for any given player. Multiply those data sets by the hundreds of players in the NBA, and you arrive at a much more granular view of what makes for a better performing athlete.
And so we can separate, you know, the quality of the opportunity versus the quality of the skill on top of that opportunity. And that's really important in sports.
And he says AI capable of understanding and contextualizing video could make for more interactive viewing experiences for all kinds of content.
The notion of machines understanding content, in particular video content and other forms of content, and giving me augmented, personalized highlights or live updates on content is a thing that will happen everywhere, because we're us observing the world and having machines observe the world and make that be better for us is a thing that's just certainly starting in sports, but sports is just the leading edge of what's going to be happening everywhere.
So Data Robot is a tool that will help anyone make predictions about the future based on what's happened in the past.
Andrew Engel is the sports analytics lead at a company called Data Robot. It works with a variety of pro teams. He says tracking data could also be used to identify when a player is on the verge of being hurt.
These machine learning algorithms could learn to predict based on the information we have whether or not an injury is likely to occur. And then on a daily or weekly basis, you could run that model to make the prediction on, well, what is happening to the player right now, and be able to tell the coaching staff that this player is at a high risk of injury and allow them to do something proactively to prevent that.
And these machine-made decisions could go beyond individual players to affect the game itself.
There's been a lot of controversy about the human umpire calling the strike zone and calling it as a human would. Mistakes happen. Different umpires see the strike zone slightly differently. And so there have been some people who've talked about the fact that Major League Baseball has all of this tracking that they could build a system to call balls and strikes today.
Basically, an automated umpire, algorithms, and new kinds of data also open the door to new ways of quantifying a player's value.
95-mile-an-hour fastball reaches home plate from the mound 60 feet 6 inches away in about 400 milliseconds. All right, so that's 4/10 of a second, which is obviously very fast.
Sports writer Zach Schonbrunn is the author of The Performance Cortex, How Neuroscience is Redefining Athletic Genius. In it, he explores how and why baseball players make split-second decisions against pitchers.
When a hitter decides not to swing, when he looks at a pitch and says, nah, it's not my pitch, there can be millions of outcomes as a result of that single decision. And so that is possibly more essential to great hitting than the decision to swing. And that information was never able to be recognized or visualized by a team.
He followed a group of neuroscientists at Columbia University who tested minor league baseball players with EEG headsets. These monitor electrical activity in the brain from outside the skull.
It's a piece of kind of metallic-looking headgear with a bunch of electrodes on it. They're kind of like small little circles that are placed along different points of your scalp. And from these electrodes, they are able to record and monitor neural activity that's happening on a very quick time scale.
This is all happening as a player sits in front of a computer screen looking at virtual pitches, like you might in a video game. Although it's not field data, he says it might still help explain why certain players swing for fastballs rather than curveballs, or vice versa. And that could help improve training or even how players are recruited.
I think probably the most critical way that neuroimaging and neuroscience can be used for professional athletics or any level of athletics is scouting and screening. It's another piece of data, another analytic that can be used to evaluate, you know, how well a hitter is performing.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about equipment that fundamentally is, it's medical equipment.
Yeah.
What about privacy concerns for players who are essentially handing over their health data?
It's a messy situation, and it's a new frontier that I don't think teams, leagues, and certainly not players have a great handle on what to do with it and how it might be used against a player. They're analyzing minor league baseball players. You know, the 18-year-olds who are just got drafted, they have no rights, you know, they have no union. And they're in a kind of in a position where if the team tells them, I want you to sit in front of a computer screen with an EEG headset, tapping at a laptop for the next 40 minutes, they're not in a position to say no, right? They want to eventually play for that team in the major leagues. And so once you get into Major League Baseball, where talking about agents and unions, there are going to be not just ethical, but also legal questions that have to be answered about how this information can be used and who owns the data and, you know, whether or not it should be used.
The movie Moneyball came out a decade ago, and I think football wasn't exactly ready to jump on top of things because it's a little bit more difficult to analyze data. The questions that have to be asked are more complex.
Michael Lopez is the director of data and analytics for the NFL.
Coaches have always tried to look at opponent tendencies. What sort of happened over the last several years is that now we have larger sample sizes, we can be a little bit more refined in our methods. Instead of just a coach saying, oh, well, in this formation, I think the team's likely to run, we can assign a sort of certain percentage to that. And sort of the new step is that we have player tracking data. And this player tracking data sort of opens up a whole new world in terms of what teams and coaches can do to understand their team and understand their opponents. Certainly, the Philadelphia Eagles have publicly been at the forefront of using this type of data. And so I think they're a good example of the ways that you can use data to help make better decisions.
The NFL is now making in-game player tracking data for every single player available to all 32 teams.
So in each of the player's shoulder pads, so on the left side and the right side, there's an RFID chip. And that RFID chip basically records 10 frames per second. Those 10 frames record a player's X and Y coordinates on the field. Within a short amount of time, you can ascertain, you know, the speed with which a player is moving, their acceleration or deceleration, obviously the directions in which they're going.
The chips have been inside shoulder pads during televised games since 2014, but now that the information is available to others, analysts can turn data about player speed, location, and direction into detailed reports about what's happening on the field.
If you're a receiver, you get how open they are. If you're a quarterback, you understand the windows with which they're trying to throw a pass into. And so it opens up a whole new world in terms of how we can understand the game and how we can understand what makes our players tick.
In other words, the data will change the way that teams make decisions, but those decisions won't be entirely handed off to machines.
I think realistically, data doesn't win championships, but I think data can put you in a better position so that the players in the field can have the best chance possible to do that. You can't just sort of open up a spreadsheet and say, all right, I'm going to find the best receiver in the NFL. That's just not how this data works. And so that takes time. It takes creativity. It takes a little bit of sort of software and development skills. And realistically, it takes a team effort.
And winning isn't all about brawn.
Athletic performance is not just physical performance, it's also mental performance, is emotional performance. You can have somebody who's physically extraordinarily fit and an athlete, and if their mind is not engaged, if they're not able to pay attention and concentrate, you're not going to get the best performance of the athletes. I'm Dr. Ali Razai. I'm the executive chair of the Rockefeller Neuroscience Institute at West Virginia University.
His research centers on facilitating a balance between two opposing parts of the nervous system, the one that's activated when you're scared and the one that helps you relax.
So the organs that are used to make an athlete perform at super high levels, those organs need to rest and recover.
To uncover the best way for athletes to reach this internal balance, it takes a lot of data. Athletes he studies wear sensors monitoring everything from sleep patterns to heart rate to the electrical conductivity of their skin. When using AI, researchers can get clues about an athlete's risk for developing certain health effects like fatigue and dehydration. In the future, Razai thinks they might also be used to monitor brain activity as athletes compete. To get the data necessary to assess players' mental states as they're tackling an opponent or attempting to block a pass will require brain sensors that can be worn on the field. That real-world information about what's going on in their heads could then be harnessed to improve performance. And it's not just limited to athletes.
It's not just for these superstar elite athletes or special op military folks. It's for everybody. All of us will be more empowered by being able to understand how our brain and physiology is working.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Anthony Green and Daniela Hernandez, with help from Brian Gutierrez and Garrett Crow. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wurdock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcast. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.
He's going to come right behind you.
Yep.
Don't run her over.
Just don't hit her. Don't hit her.
Hey, yep, run.